This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, it's Brock and Salk. Hope you're having a good morning with Sours, brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Going to talk to John Morosi here in just about a moment from MLB Network. If Jeff Passan has been the wet blanket on the Mariners season, Morosi, the unbridled enthusiasm.
Electric warm blanket.
A very different view from a different part of the national media. So looking forward to talking to him. Man, there were a lot of great highlights, though, over the weekend. I mean, you got a chance to see Alex Colomé close out a game and then set up well. You got to see Ryan Healy, big two-run go-ahead double, which will help win them a game. Of all of the calls, though, I don't think anything is going to top this one.
The 2-2. Swing, line drive, this game is over! Home run, Porch, punch your ticket, Mike Zunino, for the second straight year, a walk-off bomb against the Twins, and they are ready to pounce on him at home plate. Absolutely crushed, purple Gatorade everywhere. He wins it in the 12th, 4-3, your final. The Mariners have won this series against the Twins.
Purple Gatorade everywhere.
You know what got punched, actually? Was Eggers. You know, and that's probably one bill.
They drilled like, that sign.
Oh, yeah, busted right through, man. And those aren't cheap.
That used to be the 710 sign, you know. Edgar just repurposed that area.
Sure.
That used to be our sign.
And Mr. Stanton's like, it's going to take what? That's fine. Yeah, well, whatever it's going to take to fix that
Edgar.
Up. That's right.
No big deal, man. That really. But it's funny when he hit it. I feel like I don't know, I'm not losing interest. It was just like, oh yeah, and there's a home run for Zunino. They're just going to win that game. It didn't have the same like shock factor that some of the others have. It's like eventually they're going to find a way to win these close games at home, and it just seems a matter of time before Zunino or somebody finds a way to get it done. Let's talk to John Morosi, who joins us from MLB Network. He's here in the Venue Kings Hotline. Usually 9 o'clock Tuesday, we're moving him around the schedule today because he is a busy dude covering baseball. Now back from the hockey beat, John. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning and greetings from the beautiful city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm at a very placid Miller Park here for my morning duties today.
Milwaukee. I love it. We've been talking a lot of Mariners all morning, John, and for good reason. They just keep finding weird and wonderful ways to win. What do you think?
Well, here's the thing, and there are those that maybe look at the analytics of it and say, well, there's no way this is sustainable. They're 16-8 in one-run games at the most wins in one-run games of any team in baseball this year. They've played the most one-run games of any team in baseball this year. But what I love about the move that Jerry Dipoto made to bring in Colomé is that he's acknowledging where this team is right now, that it's going to play a lot of close games. And if you're going to play a lot of close games and you want to find a way to lessen the burden on your closer, who, by the way, leads the majors in saves right now with 19, does Diaz, which is a remarkable pace that he's on, then you get another closer and somebody that can share the burden, somebody that can close as Colomé did in his very first game with the Mariners, or pitch the eighth inning when both are rested and ready. It's just a really nice acknowledgement of where this team is, because I don't know that they're going to win a lot of 10-8 games or 10-7 games or 10-2 games. This is going to be a low-scoring type of team, and you look back in history, the Giants won a World Series this way, and it was probably a better starting rotation than what the Mariners have back in 2010. The Orioles consistently defied the odds in 2012 to make the playoffs, winning a lot of one-run games with a really, really good bullpen that year and very imaginative managing from Buck Showalter. So it's sustainable to an extent. And I think the biggest point of all, guys, I love the fact, the resiliency of the club. You lose Cano, they are 11-3 since Cano's last game. That is the best record in the American League during that span.
So what did this trade say to you Friday when it hit the wires there at the MLB Network and John Morosi with us, when it hit the newsstands? What did it say to you and your peers?
Well, first of all, Brock, it said that Jerry Dipoto had not yet reached his one trade per week quota, and it was getting late in the week, and he wanted to try to make sure that he checked that box. So in all seriousness, I think it says that Jerry believes this team can win, and he was not going to be bashful about being the first GM to step out and make a pretty significant trade this year. And I like the move with Span, too, to bring him in, a veteran, great guy in the clubhouse, phenomenal person who I think mixes really well with this team and allows D. Gordon to play second base once he's back. So I think the move made sense on a lot of different levels. I think it was a reasonable acquisition cost. And I think one name that we haven't touched on yet about somebody that helps to make all this fit in is Heredia. The way that he has played has been, Guillermo has been outstanding. And I think that this run does not happen without him. And I've just been very impressed with the way that this team has gelled together, understood the way they've got to play. And I think that Jerry DePoto's move says this is a GM who understands the way this team has to play and is giving them all the additional winning depth that he can to help make a postseason berth a reality for the Seattle Mariners.
Have you heard the story Jerry told about how this trade came together and how they came up with the idea for it? It's pretty cool. So, you know, we knew that the Mariners had a resource in money that they had saved from the Robinson Cano suspension. They have roughly $12 million. They don't have a tremendous amount in their farm system to deal. It's not a strong farm system. So this is how Jerry went about trying to figure out the best way to make their resources work for them. He essentially tasked some of his young guys with it.
They did a great job of laying out a matrix, a graph of the players that of interest. We were able to kind of convene around the list. They spent night and day for about 3 days talking it through amongst themselves, what were the best ideas that they could come up with. And then we sat in a think tank room and had them present their ideas almost like Shark Tank, you know. And as soon as Skyler was the one who had the, I guess, the fortune of delivering this message, and Skyler has been working, you know, roughly full time here for us for weeks rather than months. This is all new to him.
Pretty amazing. So it's him and then this other kid, David Hesslink, were the two young baseball ops guys. David Hesslink was a draft pick of the Mariners a year ago from MIT, and they let him play a year in low A ball as sort of a nice little thank you. But what they really drafted him for was to eventually put him in the front office, and those guys ended up conceiving of this trade. Is that modern baseball or what?
That's beautiful. That's a great story. And again, Jerry is a great leader. I think he understands the importance of giving credit to his teammates. In this context, it's the teammates in the front office. And I think that story illustrates that this team is building a culture. It's taken time. It's taken different GMs over the years. You think about the drought they've had going back to 2001. There have been some different plans that have had modest success at times that came within a couple games away of getting to the playoffs, but ultimately fell short of that goal. And I think when you hear a story like that, It speaks to a culture being developed, an openness to unique thought. I think that's a really imaginative approach here to say, you know what, we've got this windfall, if you will. It's not a windfall they wanted to have, but they've got extra money to work with. And you effectively pair up Span's money with Colome, who's probably, in a baseball standpoint, the top line player in the deal. It's a really creative way to go about things. And I give the Mariners an immense amount of credit for it. I think it just shows that Jerry understands what he's working with and understands that maybe at long last, this team is finally starting to develop a real identity in their front office, and they have to. They're going up against a team that's really struck a great balance of that in Houston, a team with the Angels that, of course, has Ohtani and then the best player on the planet in Trout and a lot of resources there in Southern California. And I think it's really unique, and I love hearing that, Mike, because it tells me that this is a team that now has a good sense of self, and from that, I believe, has a very legitimate chance to make the playoffs this year.
John Morosi with us from the MLB Network. We're also now, John, past Memorial Day. Okay, we're 53 games into the season. These Mariners are a game back of the Astros. The month of June is going to be very different with this, with the calendar and the schedule. There's just no question about it. But unlike a year ago, John, we have a lot of teams that are already done. Right, you know, last year we couldn't say this team was done, this team was done. I mean, everybody was seemingly in it with the two wild card spots. That's not the case this season. Are there more moves to be made? Are there more opportunities to spend the other $6 million or so with a Robbie Cano? Are there some trade opportunities? Is it's pretty clearly defined in a way this year, unlike some of its predecessors?
That's an excellent point, Brock, and I think that it really is a unique year for that reason. You look around the American League, and I believe that this has the chance to be one of the first years in, I think it's like 40 or 50 years, in which there are three teams, that being potentially the Astros, based at least up until this weekend, the Astros, Red Sox, and Yankees, that could finish above .650 winning percentage in the very same league. There's a real stratification that you're seeing in really, especially the American League, but I think the game overall. And what that means is, to your point, you've got a lot of very clearly defined sellers. A team like the Tigers, that nominally is not that far back from first place, is still going to be moving pieces. I think everybody realizes that. And so I think you look at the rotation, and I give the Mariners credit for finding a way so far, and Marco Gonzalez, again, was really effective over the weekend. He's been a huge pitcher for this team. They've found ways to get this rotation together where at least four guys have taken the ball every turn, but you do get the sense they're going to need maybe that one more pitcher to help round things out, and especially if there's an injury to one of the four guys that has been in there consistently. So I think whether it's a Francisco Liriano from the Tigers or other clubs that maybe have the chance to move a pitcher that are very clearly out of it, who knows what will happen. Again, the Rays may still move an Archer at some point in time as we get a little closer to the end of July. The Blue Jays with a J, Happ, that's a name to watch. I think Happ, to me, you look at free agents to be, we're making at least a little bit of money. I think J. Happ fits very nicely in that price point that you're talking about the money that's still left to go on Cano's, the money that would have been going to Robbie. So I think J. Happ is a name to watch in a big way for a team in Toronto that I believe is trending in the wrong direction from the standpoint of the standings. And I think that the names like Estrada and Happ and Donaldson, I think all could be available here in the next couple months.
What's going on with the Astros? Why are they only a game ahead of the Mariners right now?
It's a great question. Inconsistency. I saw him over the weekend in Cleveland. I think as it's remarkable because their rotation is historically great, not even good, but great. I mean, could be best ever rotation, but their lineup has been a little bit inconsistent. Even Carlos Correa not having a very good month of May. Altuve's bat by his standards now starting to wake up. I think you look at the bottom half of the lineup is not quite as formidable as it was last year. I think there's just been I think a lot of their key guys have been at about 70 to 80% of what they normally would be. You look at the outfield, and Tony Kemp has given them a big lift out there. Reddick has been hurt, so that they've had some injuries that have, I think, compromised their depth a little bit. But I think principally, Correa has not quite been himself yet, and when he is not himself, the lineup just loses a little bit of that extra length that they've had for a long time. And Bregman's been pretty good, but again, maybe not quite to his level either. So I think collectively across the board, it's been a ho-hum start to the year offensively. The bullpen has shown at times, Giles again, some more inconsistency over the weekend. But the rotation is the backbone of that team, and just how consistent they are. Again, you match up the Astros rotation, the Angels rotation, the Mariners rotation. The Astros, I believe, are going to be a hard team to beat, just given how consistently outstanding each and every one of their starts seems to be.
Talking to John Morosi from MLB.com, it's funny, we do this also with Jeff Passan, who is, he's a wet blanket, if you know Jeff, and I know you do. Jeff's not quite as positive about anything. He's from the Keith Law school of looking at baseball, which is that everybody stinks and nobody's ever going to be good, and unless you're like two players, you're not very good, which is fine. But we were asking him last week about Mariner All-Stars, and he was like, All-Stars? The Mariners have All-Stars? Like, well, Paxton, Diaz, we started wondering about Haniger, maybe Gene Segura, what he's done. As you look at this Mariner team, do you see more than one or two All-Stars?
I think three. I think Haniger's numbers, when he's been healthy the last couple of years, if you check out his OPS or other rate stats, he's as good as almost any other right fielder in the game over the last couple of years. I mean, I think he belongs in there. And again, I think Paxton, Scherr, and Diaz, again, you're leading the majors in saves right now for a team that is relying on you in such a big way, given the number of one-run games they play. So I would say those three very safely. Segura, yeah, you could make a case there certainly for him as well. It's interesting, though, and we'll see kind of how the vote totals come out. And, of course, just every year is unique. The fact that you've got in Boston and New York fans that are really in love with their rosters right now, and you know those two teams are always going to turn out big in the vote. You've got Ohtani, such a unique player in the All-Star vote. You've got Houston, which is their attendance increase has been huge. I think still they're going to have a very strong level of engagement voting for their players just coming off of the World Series year. So I think three is a fair number, and I think that it's very reasonable for the Mariner fans to expect that Haniger and Diaz and Paxton all belong in D.C. and should be there.
Great stuff. Hey, love catching up with you, man. We'll do it again here in a couple of weeks. Sounds like you're going to be in Seattle in a few weeks. Looking forward to seeing you in person. All right. Thanks
Can't
again.
Wait. Yeah, my first ever MLB on Fox game in Seattle against the Red Sox, I believe, in a few weeks' time. So nice. Can't wait.
Hey, how come you weren't? How did you get knocked off the hockey beat once they got to the Stanley Cup last night?
I guess at the moment, as I say, I work for both networks, MLB, NHL. I play the schedule that I'm given, and I do so with a great amount of joy. And at this time of the schedule, I was more needed on baseball. Oof. So here I am in the great city of Milwaukee, one of the great underrated towns in our country, by the way, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
What did you think of the opening to last night's game? What was that?
Incredible.
It was awesome.
The Vegas Golden Knights, I say this, they're the best story in sports, and seeing a game there right now, with all due respect to the national pastime and the love I have for baseball, it is probably the single greatest show in sports. Mm. Is their open? You can never be too elaborate for Las Vegas, I believe, especially for the way the Golden Knights are playing right now.
All right, man. Thank you. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
A pleasure, guys. You bet. See you.
All right, there you go. There's John Morosi, MLB Network and MLB.com. Lydia, I thought you had it perfect on that, saying your tweet yesterday, saying that they should be forced to carry on that show no matter what they're like for the rest of their history. So even if they're like, you know, in last place and a miserable team, you know, 25 and whatever. They should still have to have that entire show.
I want
show.
That exact level of energy and fanfare
with
every
an
single
empty
time.
Stadium.
Lil Jon performing, no matter what.
You watched that last night. What did you, as you were watching that, and you're an old school hockey fan, been watching your whole life, much like me. That is not what the NHL has been for most of our life. How did you take it?
I thought your tweet was, I'm giving your Twitter props now, but I thought your tweet about, this is totally not hockey, and yet it is absolutely astounding and amazing to watch because it is absolutely Vegas. It is Las Vegas. How could you have a professional sports team in Las Vegas if it wasn't everything at a level 11?
It's the show. You know, it is the greatest show and a chance to
Vegas.
Be the ultimate. Oh,
but
yeah.
But hockey's not. I mean, that's what's so funny about it is that hockey is not a show sport. There's not a, you know, it doesn't have soap opera the same way. I mean, it has revenge and some of those plots, but it's not a soap opera sport.
But they're also not a sport that has any roots there.
That's true.
You have no history.
You better
there.
Find a way to build
yes,
it.
So this is all new.
It was awesome last night. I know the NBA games are going to get a lot of the pub, but last night was a great opening to that hockey series. And if you have a chance to watch Doc Emmerich and listen to him, the final minute of a close game, which is what we had last night, you know, a minute or so to play, they pull the goalie, and I was trying to read Avery's story. I was like, I'm sorry, you're just going to have to hold on a second.
I'm sorry, it's killing me.
No, I just, oh, give me a second. Let's watch this together. And so Avery and I were watching it. Doc Emmerich is the best play-by-play guy in the world in these moments. And when the game gets crazy like that, it's like it slows down for him.
Wow. Ovechkin dropped it back off yet again. Brought back in by Oshie. Fed on across the Wilson. Oh, it's beginning on it was Zettler. Backstrom working it back in deep. Burakovsky gave it back to him. Then it is over for Burakovsky and then Backstrom to the back. Ovechkin tried to slip it across. It's blocked there. Poked on out to center. Nosek has an empty net. Sweeping on in. Scores!
And honestly, that doesn't even fully do it justice. I mean, if you could find just the live call of, and we look for it, I apologize, we weren't able to get the full minute and a half or so. He sounds like an auctioneer who's just in complete control of the room. And this is going on here, and this goes over to here, and the puck slides over to here, and this guy's making a move in the boards, and the goalie's out of his net. And he sees it so clearly. Mm. It is fascinating to listen to as you're watching, and there is nothing quite like the drama at the very end of a close, big hockey game like that when a team is down and they've pulled the goalie and they're desperately trying to and if you're rooting for that team that's down, I think you just find yourself at times staring at the back of the net. Like, I don't even care how it gets there. Just put that puck and I want to see it flash into the back of the net, let the lights and the sirens hit, because it's desperation, man. It's amazing to watch.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I'll tell you what else was really cool was that sound of Jerry DePoto.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but as he was talking on the Wheelhouse there, that's the podcast that he does with Goldie, talking about that trade, or in this case, just talking about how the foundation of it was built, and he mentioned Shark Tank. I'm sorry, I couldn't help but think of John Stanton, like Cuban, sitting over there, right, just pestering them with questions. I don't know who Mr. Wonderful would be. Is that Mather? Is Mather Mr. Wonderful? And then Jerry's both combination of Barbara, right? Jerry's got a little Barbara and Robert in him. Mm. Like, you know, Southern California
guy. I would say
guy.
He's got a lot of Robert in him.
A lot of Robert
he's
in him.
He's got a lot more Robert in him. Jerry? You don't think Jerry has some Robert in him?
Robert never gets the deal because he's always like too nice. So that would be the complete opposite.
It's a little Barbara. Yeah, it's a little bit different, but he's kind of got the like, he's all cool like Robert. He's got the clothes. Like, he's got some Robert in him for sure.
He's too handsome for his age.
Exactly. He's definitely got some Robert
Happy
in him.
Happy 50th to Jerry, by the way.
Jerry turned 50?
Wow. Yeah, last week, a couple days ago.
Wouldn't it, just like Robert, I wouldn't have guessed that.
He's looking great.
He's got a lot of Robert in him.
That's pretty cool.
Maybe he's got some Lori in him. Maybe he's more like Lori.
Maybe, yeah, that's right. And Barbara's a little too,
Barbara's kind of like crusty kind of about stuff.
Yeah,
kind of
a lot more. I meant Lori. There's a combo of Lori and Robert.
Well, and they always sit together on the side and flirt with each other anyway, Robert and Lori. So maybe there's something going on. I don't know. You're shaking your head. I think they do. They're always sort of, he's always like, oh, Lori, let me help you with that. You ever notice that? Robert's always like, oh, no, let me get that. Lori, don't get up. I'll get it for you. Like, all right. Calm down there, Hershevik. Take it down a notch.
Sorry, that was a tangent. I didn't mean to take the show.
I haven't even watched that show in like a year, but the personalities in that show are so strong. You know exactly how everybody's going to handle it.
I like that it was, it started out business strategies, but now we've like tangentially got into you talking about romantic storylines, subplots.
You turn it into Jersey Shore billionaires.
You have to, because that show has regressed to the point where everybody just shows up and is like, I appreciate what the other four of you have said. Mark, are you interested? Because all they want to do is deals with Mark Cuban, and everybody else is there just for show. All right, you want to talk some more about Jerry?
Yes, and we got a montage. We finally got to play at some point.
All right, here's what I'm going to do. We'll play the montage on the way out here because I want to talk about Jerry DePoto and everything he has done. Said last week that it's time to extend Jerry DePoto. I doubled down on that after Friday. A deal that continues to make the Mariners what they are. It's coming up next. Take a listen to where they're at right now.
Heredia's there, and he makes the catch, and the ball game is over. The Mariners win it 2-1. Sugar with a save. How sweet it is.
Our offense, we never feel like we're out of games.
Swinging a line drive, base hit, left center field. Haniger rounding third, he will score. The ball gets on by Rosario all the way to the wall.
Pitching is what's kept us going and put this, the streak we're in right now. It's kept us right in all these ball games.
Tactics payoff on the way. Swing and a miss for strike three. A weak and feeble wave at a pitch in the other batter's box.
Scott has said over and over and over, bullpen, bullpen, bullpen. And this is the way we felt like we could impact it.
Alex Colome with his Mariners debut this afternoon takes care of the Twins.
Span hits the bag at third. Here he comes, waving home. Span scores standing.
Everybody is contributing and everybody feels like they're a part of it.
Swing, line drive. This game is over. Home run, Porch. Punch your ticket, Mike Zunino, for the second straight year, a walk-off bomb against the Twins, and they are ready to pounce on him at home plate.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Swing and a one-hopper to short. Backhanded by Romine. He's got it. Long throw to first. Ball game is over. The Mariners win it. 3-1 over the Twins. And they sweep Minnesota in the three-game series. What a way to start off this homestand. Alex Colome with his Mariners debut this afternoon takes care of the Twins.
That was new acquisition Alex Colome coming up with the save. He had a hold yesterday. He's already been effective in his first two games as a Mariner. Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. I said last week they should extend Jerry DePoto, Brock, and this trade only confirms it for me. It's a brilliant trade. Mm-hmm. I like everything about it. I like that you bring in a reliever who can close when you need him to, which you may, because as you just heard from John Morosi, the pace that Diaz is on is probably unsustainable. You've had issues in your bullpen. Nicasio has not been perfect by any stretch in the eighth inning. Pazos is still a young guy. We'll wait and see. And Nick Vincent just went down with a groin injury. I'm sure he'll be back. Better to be a little leg thing than an arm thing. But this gives you a lot of depth, gives you a lot of options, and I love both those elements to it. I love the creativity in finding a couple of players that you didn't need to give up much for in the way of prospects. Instead, you just use the other resource that you actually have more of. In this case, that's monetary, that's money.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always say this, and you and I have talked about this, and I know I've told you this story before. But when I was covering the 2007 Red Sox, they made a deal that year at the trade deadline. They were like a good team, and you weren't sure whether or not they were going to be a great team. And right at the trade deadline, they made a deal for Eric Gagne, who at that time was pitching for Texas. He was terrible down the stretch. He did not help them. He turned himself into a bad pitcher the moment he got to Boston. He was on one playoff roster, I think not the rest of them, because he was so bad.
Mm.
And yet, I really truly believe to this day that trade helped them win the World Series that year.
Just because of the message it sent?
Because of the message it sent. It told that clubhouse, we believe in you, we're going to go get the best guy we can. It turned out he didn't even help them on the field. But I really believe it helped give them the confidence, and everything that the Mariners have done the last few years under Scott Servais, I think has been about confidence. And Scott said so as soon as the trade was made.
I think it's an awesome message that everything we've dealt with in the last 8 to 10 days here, I think it starts at the ownership level and the front office, is that we're all in on this season. And even though we had the setback and losing Robbie with the injury and then the suspension, it's not going to derail us from our eyes are set on the goal. That's getting to the playoffs, and I think this helps us.
Really is remarkable. And ultimately, we said when Robbie went down, okay, now the team's going to tell this front office and everybody else what they're about. And they're 11-3.
It's amazing.
I mean, and now these aren't convincing wins. They're not blowing people away.
11-3 is 11-3, no matter how you slice it.
It sure is. And it's, and a big part of it is they're 16-8 in one-run games. And it's just some of the confidence that they have that no matter what the situation is, and when you genuinely have somebody, I mean, save for Romine and Beckham, everybody else is, when they get up to the plate, Heredia, Healy, Zunino, Seager, Cruz, Haniger, like, they're going to get something done. Like, okay, just get somebody aboard, and they can find a way to get something done. And that is exactly what has transpired here. The team is going to make the decision. The players are going to make the decision for the skipper and for the general manager. I really believe that in nearly every sport and every occasion.
Yeah.
And they've told these guys, go for it. And that's exactly what they got done on Friday. My only fear is exactly what Howdy said this morning. I shot that in the note to you last night. That Colome is a tremendous player. Was an all-star a couple years ago. We have watched him close out the Mariner games.
He's got some swag, too, by the way.
Yes.
But he's got some swag to him. He's got a little young Fernando Rodney to him with the cockeyed hat, little bit of a gut, stands up there with an attitude,
yep.
Throws hard. Like, he's definitely got a little cockiness.
He does,
to him.
But
I like
we have
that.
Seen in these pitcher transactions that current team knows a whole lot more about him than the team that's inheriting him. That's just simply the case. And we have seen, with Phelps, we have seen arm injury, plenty of them with the Shea Simmons and the guys that you bring in that maybe that other team organizationally, not that they're trying to deceive. And at any time, a pitcher is a ticking time bomb. So it's just they've got more background.
Yeah,
and that's the only concern
I
would have.
If that's the case, then don't trade for pitchers ever.
No, I get that. But why?
I just I understand what you're
saying. Younger players and younger prospects and everything else. But they just know a little bit more about
the same is true even with the younger prospects. Then I can't quite buy that. I understand what you're saying. And
if a shoulder flares up or an elbow tightens or something goes down,
I think that'll be honestly a causation problem. I don't know that one will be because of the other. Pitchers get hurt. They blow out their arms all the time. We watch Nick Vincent, who's looked totally fine. All of a sudden he hurts his groin. I mean, it seemed doing just the same motion he's done every other time. Pitching is unnatural. And eventually these guys get hurt. It's only a matter of when, not if. But I don't know that I can walk into this with that kind
either
of
way. I would still spend the money this way.
And especially because it's only money. The only thing you are doing is spending money here. You are not giving up much in the way of prospects. Andrew Moore, we've seen at the big league level. Was anybody sitting here holding out hope for Andrew Moore, top three of the rotation starter?
No, but were we holding out a year ago hope that Marco Gonzalez could do this?
No, that's fair.
Right? I mean, that's just the way pitchers
go. But Marco was a first-round pick and an athlete and had some of a track record. I mean, Andrew Moore just doesn't he's a pitchability guy. He's not a stuff guy, and ultimately you kind of watch him like, yeah, all right, yeah, he might end up kind of being a serviceable major leaguer and he'll be around the game for a while, but that doesn't mean he's a player that you need to make sure stays on your team. And when you're able to go acquire two players for that, I think that is a huge win for Jerry Dipoto, and it gives and assuming he does stay healthy. And when Vincent comes back, it really gives Scott Servais options. I mean, think about what the ends of your games look like now,
yes.
where you legitimately have one of the best closers in the game, an eighth inning guy you trust with some backups at those spots. Nicasio moves into much more of a lower leverage setup role for now until you get him right, which is helpful. You got Pazos, who's throwing as well as he's thrown. You have a lefty reliever that hopefully, and Zibchinski, who you can use for the one out and you can afford to do so. he'd actually be the one person I'd question whether or not he makes it through this whole shuffle. Because if Ryan Cook is as nasty as he is, and he's been ridiculously good since coming up, do you end up needing to stay with Bradford as sort of a longer reliever?
But it's just amazing. Because, Mike, we don't have to go back years and play my Mark Lowe sound. Go back a month and play your sound of your just real
bullpen
concern
stinks.
For this bullpen.
And a month ago, I'm looking at him going, look, if Nicasio's not good and he didn't look like it, they stink. And since then, Pazos completely emerges and has been lights out. Yeah, good credit to him. He's always made me nervous, but over the last couple of weeks, he's been dominant, essentially. Really, really good in every situation they've used him. And now you add one more really good player to it, and you're just better. What can I say?
Yep. It's the beauty of baseball. And then I love this story.
Don't you also think, before you get to the story, don't you also think that this it's contagious at times? That being a good bullpen is contagious. Like, Chasen Bradford's just around these guys, and because of it, he gets better.
Well, we have seen that. We have seen that in years, whether it was the headgear the Mariner guys wore out there.
The year it was Farquhar and yes.
The bartender.
What's the dude's name? The big dude, Medina, whatever his name, Yorvis Medina. I mean, it just seems like, there are these moments where it just kind of coalesces for a bullpen, and they get good by osmosis. It's bizarre.
Those poor guys spend a lot of lonely, idle time out there with one another, but all of this comes together. Where did this even originate? What a great story. DePoto, again, with Goldie on the wheelhouse, talking about where this move originated.
They did a great job of laying out a matrix, a graph of the players that of interest. We were able to kind of convene around the list. They spent night and day for about 3 days talking it through amongst themselves, what were the best ideas that they could come up with. And then we sat in a think tank room and had them present their ideas almost like Shark Tank, you know. And as soon as Skyler was the one who had the fortune of delivering this message, and Skyler has been working, you know, roughly full time here for us for weeks rather than months. This is all new to him.
It's really amazing. And the other kid we mentioned earlier is David Hesslink, and that story is, it just speaks to what baseball's become in 2018. He was drafted by the Mariners last year. They let him play in single A, which was sort of a nice little gift to him. But the reason they drafted him out of MIT is because he's a genius.
Yep.
They want him to work in the front office. They wanted him in their baseball ops department. And they thought, like, hey, you know, kid, here you go. We're going to throw you a bone. And also it'll help you kind of be around the players and be around a team to kind of get some of that experience. It's an amazing, amazing story.
He had a job offer that was going to pay him more, essentially. So then you draft him and you pay him his signing bonus or whatever it is. And then you also give him the experience of throwing 27 bad innings in Everett, and then he moved into the front office.
And he has fun with it, too. You give him a chance to realize part of his dream and play another year of baseball at a high level.
This is a guy that in his internship at MIT was working with the Houston Astros and already designing like algorithms and systems with them, and that was just while he was in college.
And contrast that to a Chuck and Howard front office. It was just very different. I mean, it was just very old school. They were going to do the deals that their way, and then a Jack Zarenczyk that came in, right, that couldn't answer any of our questions, just wouldn't be willing to do that or have a podcast or be open to any of these ideas. It's, you know, these Mariners are doing things a little bit differently in every way. We're seeing it off the field, and now we're seeing some real fruit of it on the field, because you got to go back through 53 games to 2003. That's the last time that we have seen a start like this, 15-plus years, in a different cast of characters, largely getting it done every night. It's been awesome.
It's been very cool, and we'll talk to you guys about it. Open up the phone lines coming up here at 9 o'clock. Simple question if you want to jump the gun on it. What's the biggest reason? How do you explain the Mariners' bizarre success so far? How do you explain it? And we certainly have our answers. We want to hear yours as well. 206-421-3776. How do you explain the Mariners' bizarre success so far this year? We'll do that right after good news, bad news, no news, and maybe the least surprising news of all time. It involves dinner, and it's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
Fighting with Kyle back there, I'll tell you why in a minute. It leads into our 9 o'clock question. Nearly came to blows in the back row.
Oh, really?
Well, no.
Oh, like the folks on the airplane on the Avianca flight?
We're going to have to hear this story.
Where police were called on the airplane when we were on the tarmac? Oh, and that happened?
I don't understand why every time you get in a plane, everything changes in the world.
Oh, my gosh.
I go to planes. I get on. I fall asleep. I get off when we land. It's it's generally pretty issue-free.
There's one common denominator in Brock's plane issues.
Yes.
And that's Brock. And he has more issues than anyone I've ever met.
It's different airlines.
And he's always like, well, I don't know. It's just all these people around me. Like, well, maybe it's you.
The police were called.
The police were on the airplane.
All right. So let's finish.
That was bad news.
Let's buzz through good news, bad news, no news, because I've got to hear that story. What's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Mariners are 11-3 since Robinson Cano left the lineup.
That is great news. Most of them are one-run games. Actually, they're 16-8. That leads the league in one-run games. It's been remarkable. It's been a different character in this play all season long. But, I mean, come on now. That's just great news, finding ways to win.
It's bizarre news, Kyle. Howdy.
Go on.
A couple of mooks back there giving me grief because I said this Mariner thing has been bizarre. Their bizarre success. Every night has been a different and crazy and weird, wild way that the Mariners have
found a way
to win.
Morosi was right. I mean, we've seen teams. We've seen the Orioles. We've seen the San Francisco Giants.
The
we've
Twins
seen
last
teams.
Year.
Yeah.
But we haven't. We've sat here and watched the Mariners find ways to lose every single one of these games and more. And yet this year, everything seems to have turned the other way. It's great news. Bizarre news. All at once.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Cavs will face the Warriors in the NBA Finals for the fourth year in a row.
I can't wait to hear how Daniels is going to be for Howdy when Brock takes him. Due to LeBron finding a way somehow to beat the Celtics, and somehow, some way, the Warriors came back. I thought it was well scripted this year, Howdy. Both teams getting down 3-2, needing to win game sevens on the road, getting down in those games. But of course, somehow, some way, LeBron and Steph found a way to make it back.
No one could have pictured it.
Who could have ever imagined it would be these two teams once again?
Brock, how does it feel to be so gullible?
Yeah, Brock, how does it feel?
Yeah, because it was totally within the script, right? These players were told to miss 25 three-pointers in a row.
No.
They were told to do that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But it worked out that way. Go figure.
It was amazing.
That's terrible, by the way. How do you watch a team? Watching a team miss that many threes in a
game is not fun to watch. Yeah, and I saw your tweet, but come on. You're kind of hypocritical because, listen, this is Houston's game. You don't want them, and they were talking about it. By the way, that's a bad broadcast. I'm just going to say the Jeff Van Gundy crew that does the finals, like that's Masters-level stuff. It is junior high-ish. It is the analysis. Everything was so bad on that broadcast. But that's beside the point. Your tweet's like, how can't you do anything different if you're missing all these streets? No, that's their identity.
But
that's who they are.
You preach
identity
else you can do?
All the time. No, that is the Rockets' identity,
but that's
and they were not
some of the
deviate.
Problem with the NBA is that's what the NBA game has devolved into. Watching teams bomb threes. Great.
Well,
so
the
they don't have any
65
idea, but they don't have any idea how to do anything else.
Got on the brink of the finals where they would have been favored. Unfortunately, missed Chris Paul for two games. They weren't going to bust their identity.
They're bombing threes up 10. Like, the whole thing was, it was honestly, it was hard to watch.
It was no news.
They were open threes, too.
Oh, yes.
No news.
It was bizarre.
None of it was news.
Bizarro.
That was just no news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Vegas beat Washington to take game one of the Stanley Cup Finals 6-4 yesterday. More importantly, Little John opened up.
It was important.
Good news. It's going to be a 7-game series. Can't wait to watch it. Can't wait to watch game seven. Probably going to go to overtime because there's nothing better than, you know, overtime and game seven of a hockey match. So, great news.
How about Chris Angel, too? I mean, like, the star-studded cast in and around the Vegas opening. Michael Buffer coming out to do his thing. Screwed up a name. Like, it was great. The show was amazing. The game was that much better. It was a really good hockey game last night. I'm excited to watch these two teams go back and forth for seven.
Good news, bad news, no news.
UW is one of four Pac-12 teams in the Women's College World Series. Only 8 teams total made the field.
I mean, first of all, that's great news and good for them, good for that entire team, and good for the Pac-12. I guess I would like for them to have some success in maybe some of the other sports, too.
Yeah, Molly and I had a good talk about this last night, actually, and I don't think they're mutually in any way connected. I really don't. This isn't a matter of Larry Scott saying, oh, pour more resources into fast pitch and into women's basketball and into track and into swimming and Olympic sports and let's not give enough to football. It's not necessarily a resources issue. It is a scheduling issue. It is an exposure issue. It is a bitterness issue with your coaches and ADs in your major revenue sports of football and basketball. But the 13th College World Series trip for Heather Tarr and the Huskies is awesome. Half the field He is Pac-12. Awesome. Half the Elite Eight in the women's basketball was the Pac-12 conference. That is awesome. So all of that is awesome good news.
All right, Sprock, tell me the story. That's okay. Good news, bad news, no news every day at 8:45. So you tweeted or texted me and Kyle this as you were leaving on Wednesday afternoon.
Thursday. We left Thursday.
Whatever. Thursday afternoon. Excuse me. Can you please explain what happened?
Yeah, so it's totally great flight, Alaska down. I mean, actually, we were a little delayed because of LAX traffic. Nothing Alaska could do. So got down to LAX. It was a little bit of a hustle. Somehow, if someone can tell me where Terminal 3 is, it's a ghost terminal. It's not on any map. Molly and me and the kids, short on time now, international flight, scrambling, running.
Terminal 3 at LAX?
Yes.
I know where that is.
Well, supposedly you got to take like a bus.
Right to between it. 2 and 4.
Yeah, no, but it's not on any map. No, it's not. And by the way, total mess. We're running around. We're sweating. Oh my gosh, how are we going to ever get on this flight? We finally get there. We don't have boarding passes, but they were gracious because our bags made it onto the flight. So then they gave us tickets at the gate. So we get off, literally sweating. I mean, one of those, ran a mile, sweating. Get on there, and then we're sitting. Okay, we're sitting a while, and I see maintenance come on. I've been around the block a few times on these delayed flights. Maintenance is on. All right, they're working on things. Then we got out to the tarmac. It's about an hour. We're on the tarmac, and all of a sudden, we're on the tarmac, and we're on there a long time. And there's like another blinking light going off. Like, this is not good. This is not good at all. And it turned out we were delayed 5 hours. We were on the tarmac for the next 3 hours.
Oh yeah. They didn't bring you back.
They finally brought us back. People got off the plane. Their bags had to get off for another hour. Right, so we're 4 or 5 hours deep. Now people are starting to get restless. And then they say the flight's canceled. Flight's canceled, right? And it's all in Spanish. I can't understand it first, but I see people freaking out. And then they tell me the translation. Flight gets canceled. 5 minutes later, flight's not canceled. And then there people are getting frustrated. You can get off the plane now, but your bags are not going to make it to El Salvador. And then there's full-on riots, swearing.
You mean there's full-on riots?
I mean full-on swearing. Get me off this plane, swearing. They would not allow people got off the plane. They must have called the police because then the police come onto the plane.
Why?
You can see them because people are freaking out that they're not going to like get their bags off the plane. It was a mess. But some 19 hours later, we landed in San Salvador, and then our bags didn't make it, of course, for another 36 hours. So, yeah, it was quite an adventure.
Wow. Did you just wear the same clothes the whole time?
Well,
Did you plan ahead for some of that?
I don't.
In the backpack?
You know that I never check a bag.
Right, ever since your disaster.
Never ever check a bag. I don't think internationally Molly and the kids ever will again either.
Wow.
Because, yeah, they were in the same sweaty clothes in a sweaty, hot, stuffy El Salvador for 36 hours. But you know what? Wasn't going to get in our way. Had an unbelievable
Can't
trip.
Stop the Hewards.
Can't stop us.
Can't stop
haters
the Hewards.
Haters ain't going to, what's that song? What's the Seahawks song? Ain't no hater going to.
These haters can't hold me back.
That's exactly right. Not holding us back. No way, Avianca.
I got to tell you, the only time I can ever remember sweating at an airport, really running for a flight, guess who I was with?
Me.
I was with Brock. I was in London, and we just decided. Brock's like, we'll just take our time. We got plenty of time. That terminal's right down the. It was at the complete other end of Heathrow Airport. And there we were, sprinting through
Come
the airport
on,
to
son.
Try to make our
we
flight. Only other time it's happened. All right, 206-421-3776. My question is this, Kyle. How do you explain the Mariners' bizarre season and success so far? 206-421-3776. You're next. I'm Brock and Salk.
I don't know. I don't see a 90-something win team that they're putting out there on the field. Do you guys?